All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves in the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. I also just want to welcome back Mrs. Haber, who just got up this week from sitting shiva for her father, Zichron Livracha. We hope that of the merit of our Talmud Torah's neshama will have an aliyah in the family and a chama. So with that, let's begin. I want to draw your attention. You know, in these parshios of Bereishis, it's so hard to figure out what to really devote our attention to, because there are so many dramatic stories and incredible stories. So what I like to try to do is to focus on the stories that often don't get a lot of attention, the stories that kind of fall by on the shoulder of the road of the more popular narrative. And one of those stories, which I think is one of the strangest stories in Chumash Bereishis, is what we're going to focus on today. Take a look at number one. So the Torah says, remember, just to give us a little bit of context, Parshas Vayetze, Yaakov Avinu has left the familial home under really the threat of death from Esav. He's relocating to Haran, to the house of Lavan, to his uncle. He's there ostensibly to go ahead and get married, but the truth is he's really there to save his life. When he's there, ultimately, again, he meets Rachel, he meets Leah, he gets married, Baruch Hashem. It's not exactly a happy home. We're going to talk about that a little bit over the course of tonight's shiur. It's an exceptionally complicated family dynamic, and that's really putting it very mildly. So we pick up in the middle of this story. So already, again, at this point in time, we'll see five of the boys have already been born. So the shvatim, the familial maturation, is already occurring. So the Torah says as follows. Number one, Vayilech Ruven b'mei ketzir chitim. Ruven went during the days of the wheat harvest. Vayimtsa dudaim basada. And he found dudaim, the English translation of dudaim, as you can see on your sheet, dudaim. So the truth is, the reason I just didn't get into translating it is because there happens to be a fascinating dispute amongst the commentaries. What are dudaim? So some understand that it was actually some type of form of biblical remedy for infertility. That's why Reuben was bringing this back for his mother. He knew that his mother wanted to have more children. Others say they were just beautiful seasonal flowers. What exactly they were is not even so important for what it is that we're doing tonight. But Reuben finds dudaim in the field, which is quite beautiful. Vayave osam el Leah imo. And he brings them home for Leah, his mother. Now, just so you appreciate this story, Reuben at the time of this story is probably about 4, 5, 6 years old. See, he's a little boy. So it's actually a very beautiful story. He's out in the field playing, doing whatever he's doing in the field. He sees beautiful flowers, and he decides to bring them back for his mother. Such a beautiful story. So then the Torah goes on. Batomer Rachel Aleah, Tini la miduda ibenich. Rachel says to Leah, remember Rachel, Leah's sisters. Rachel says to Leah, tell me, can I have some of the flowers that your son brought back? And Leah's response is shocking. Batomer la. Leah says to Rachel, "Hamaat kachteich es ishi, velakachas gam es dudai bni." Tell me, it's not enough that you took my husband. Now you want to take my child's flowers as well? Batomer Rachel. Rachel said, "Lachein yishkav imach halayla tachas dudai bneich." Yaakov will sleep with you tonight because of the flowers that you will give me. An incredibly strange story. Right? Strange on many different levels. Strange because, again, the reaction between the sisters is actually quite dramatic. Strange because what is this that Rachel is bartering with Yaakov Avinu's, you know, with intimacy? Give me the flowers and you could have Yaakov tonight. As if Yaakov is a commodity, as if Yaakov is an object, and the wives could decide amongst themselves where he's going to go, what's going to happen. How are you to understand this story? And remember, the deeper question, which is always the question when we see these kind of stories, is the Torah is not a storybook. This is incredibly important. We speak of this all the time. The Torah is a book of laws. And whenever the Torah tells us a story, stories are only shared because of their moral, ethical implications. There's always a message from the story. So this is not, oh, so interesting, a little bit of a snapshot, right? Good to know. I'm not the only person with a family who has problems, right? Torah tells us other families have problems also, even those of the matriarchs and patriarchs. No, there's got to be something. So Rav Hirsch advances an incredibly novel approach that no one agrees with. Rav Hirsch writes, "This business of the mandrakes has again and again been taken by commentators in a serious vein. So first of all, everybody treats this story with so much seriousness, but it is quite unthinkable that Leah, whose whole life was devoted to gain the complete love of her husband, could possibly have uttered the words, "You have got my man, and now you want my bunch of flowers also," in any serious sense. As if the possession of a few flowers could come into the very slightest consideration. Rather, the whole matter appears as an instance to show a state of the two sisters living together in the most confidential intimacy. While Jacob is out in the field, the two wives sit together. His evenings he spends alternatively with each one of them. Reuven, who was still a little boy, brings some wild flowers home to his mother. "Give me some of them," says Rachel. "What sauce to ask for my precious flowers?" says Leah jokingly. But of course she gives her some. "Now," says Rachel, "because you have been so kind, he shall come to you this evening." Kachtech esishi can also quite likely refer just to that day. Last evening, you... So Rav Hirsch understands, and this is dramatic, Rav Hirsch understands that this is a nice story. This story actually tells us how beautifully the sisters, who are also co-wives, coexist. There's shalom in the family. Everybody's getting along. And so whereas we read this exchange to be Rachel and Leah snapping at each other, no. They're just joking around, right? It's not enough that you've got my man, haha. Now you also want some flowers. Fine, here's the flowers, and you could have him tonight. According to Rav Hirsch, this tells us, lest you think that everybody didn't get along, chas v'shalom. It was one big, happy family. Very novel, which is why no one else agrees with it. Now, first of all, no one else agrees with it for one simple reason. You know that on a biblical level, polygamy is permitted, right? A man is permitted to marry more than one wife without getting into the different types of wives. Remember, again, from a biblical perspective, there's a pilegesh, there's a wife, different forms of marriages. That's not our topic. But on a technical level, a man is permitted to marry more than one wife. Yet we know the same Torah that permits polygamy also says that what? That a second wife is called a tzara. A tzara. Now that's a little meaning. A tzara means a co-wife. Which translates like a co-wife. Tzara also happens to be the same word that means problems. Why? Because at the end of the day, it's a recipe for disaster. Right? Anytime the Torah tells us a story about a man with more than one wife, the story never ends on. The truth is, we haven't had too many of them. Right? So far before this, who have we had? Avram, right? Avram, Sarah, and Hagar. That ended very badly. Very badly. Ironically enough, after the death of Sarah Imenu, Avram Avinu remarries one by the name of Keturah, who Rashi identifies as Hagar. But ultimately, again, that was after Sarah Imenu already passed away. Amazingly enough, who doesn't even think about a second wife? Yitzchak, right? For good reason. Why? Because Yitzchak saw the family dynamics. Yitzchak saw what happened when another woman came into the home and she gave birth to a son and how that son was exiled from the home. It did not end well. Yaakov Avinu runs into a different set of circumstances. Remember again, ideally, Yaakov Avinu didn't want two wives. Yaakov Avinu, he has two wives and two pilakshim, right? Two wives and two concubines, because Bilhah and Zilpah were also quasi-wives, but that wasn't Yaakov Avinu's intent. Remember again, Yaakov Avinu kind of, for lack of a better term, falls into this situation because of the trickery of Lavan. His intent, Yaakov Avinu's intent was to marry Rachel. That was it. That was it, right? He was going to take the example of his father and marry one woman. It's only because of a confluence of circumstances that ultimately, again, he ends up with this much larger family. But according to Rav Hirsch, the entire point of this story is to tell us everyone gets along. We're going to leave Rav Hirsch on the side, and we're going to focus on the more generally accepted approach to this story, which is that this story tells us that this is not an easy family to live in. That these are not easy circumstances to deal with. That things are actually quite difficult in the home of Yaakov Avinu. So what's unfolding over here? So a little bit of background. Take a look at number three. So the Torah says, and this is also such a dramatic pasuk. Vayavo gam el Rachel. So remember again, Yaakov Avinu was tricked into marrying Leah. So what happens? He marries Leah, but he still doesn't want to give up on Rachel. Remember again, there was some type of connection that existed between Yaakov and Rachel. We see this connection where, because the very first time that he ever lays eyes on Rachel, what does he do? But he cries, right? Yes, he has a surge of strength to move the stone, but he cries. There is a deep and profound emotional connection between Yaakov and Rachel. So what happens? He ends up marrying Leah, right? But then again, he works for another 7 years, marries Rachel. Vayehav gam es Rachel mi Leah. So this is a very interesting phrase. So vayehav gam es Rachel mi Leah sounds like what? Now, normally we translate this to mean what? That he loved Rachel more than Leah. He loved Rachel more than Leah. But the verbiage here is very interesting. Vayehav gam es Rachel. He also loved Rachel. What does also loved Rachel mean? That he loved Leah as well. He loved Leah as well. He just what? He just loved Rachel more than he loved Leah. Now understand, that's not an indictment of Yaakov Avinu. Remember again, let's play this story out. Yaakov Avinu could have very easily done what with Leah? Divorced her. Right? Very easily, right? The morning after, v'hinei Leah, it's Leah. Surprise, right? It's Leah. It's not Rachel. He could have very easily said, I did not agree to this. I did not agree to this, and I'm not going to live my life with a woman who I did not agree to marry. But yet, amazingly enough, he doesn't do that. He doesn't, it's really fascinating. He doesn't do that. Instead, whether it's that he understood that this is part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's plan, so therefore I'm just going to go with it, or some other cheshbon, he never divorces Leah. Not only does he not divorce Leah, but he develops deep feelings for Leah. Not only does he develop deep feelings for Leah, he loves Leah. Just the issue is, he loves Rachel more. He loves Rachel more. It's understandable that he loves Rachel more. Rachel was the woman he always wanted to marry. Rachel was his intended. Rachel was the one that he saw and he said, this is the woman who completes me. But yet again, so this is very important because sometimes we think Yaakov didn't love Leah, but he loved Rachel. And that's not what the pasuk is saying. He loved Leah, but he loved Rachel more. But herein lies the tension in the marriage. Take a look at number four. Rav Schwab, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, says something amazing. Rav Schwab writes, "Hare mashmos ha-pasuk she'ahav es Leah, aval lo kimo Rachel." Rav Schwab says, just like what we're saying, the basic reading of the pasuk tells us Yaakov, of course, loved Leah, just not as much as he loved Rachel. V'im kein yesh levar perish vayar Hashem ki snu Leah. So I'm sorry, I didn't put this pasuk on the sheet, but remember again, the next verse says, Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah, vayiftach es rachma. God saw that Leah was snua. Snua means what?
Hated,
despised. God saw that she was despised, so he gave her children. Right? Leah Imenu is the only one of the Imos who does not struggle with prolonged infertility. Only one. Right? So Leah is given children immediately. So this is Rav Schwab. What's happening over here? The pasuk says, Vayehab gam es Rachel mi Leah, which means Yaakov Avinu loves Rachel. Loves Leah. He just what? He loves Rachel more. Leah wasn't despised. Chas v'shalom. Leah was loved, appreciated, I'm sure very well taken care of by her husband. But yet the next pasuk says that God saw that Leah was despised. So why are you calling her despised if the pasuk just beforehand said that she was loved? And Rav Schwab here says something amazing. It's an amazing insight into marriage, and it's just an amazing insight into the story. Rav Schwab writes, "Od yesh la'ayin shebarush Yaakov inu la'avr chas shalom alotis nesachicha b'babacha." So remember again, there's another issue. The Gemara says that the avos, the patriarchs kept the entire Torah. Whatever exactly that statement means, right? One of the mitzvos, or one of the prohibitions in the Torah, is lo sisna sachicha bilvavacha. You are not allowed to hate another person. You're not allowed to hate. So how could the Torah say that Leah, God saw that Leah was despised? To say that Leah was despised must mean that Yaakov despised her. But if Yaakov despised her, he's violating some of the very tenets of the Torah that he has pledged to uphold. So what's going on over here? Look at the second paragraph. Schwab says something so amazing. Number four, second paragraph. Roi mizeh. We learn a very important lesson from this, which is, Bein ish li ishto, eino geder sinas ha'ayvim. When it comes to the relationship between a husband and a wife, love and hate have different kinds of definitions. What do I mean by that? He says, Ella, Sheba'avas Isha Acheres Yoser Mimena, Harezu Tichoshev, Kisina Be'eni HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rav Schwab says something so amazing. In a healthy marriage, what does a wife need to know more than anything? Not just that she's loved, but she's loved more than anyone else. That she is the center of her husband's universe. It's not enough to know that I'm loved by my husband. I need to know that he loves no one like he loves me. Says Rav Schwab something absolutely amazing. Does Leah know that her husband loves her? Yeah. Of course she does. But she also knows that what? That she loves, he loves someone else more. And when it comes to a marriage, when a wife knows that her husband loves someone else more, that's the equivalent of being despised. So what Rav Schwab says is something so amazing. In number three, this Torah is telling us the factual reality. The factual reality is that Yaakov loves both of his wives. Yaakov loves Rachel and Leah. But the factual reality is he loves Rachel more than Leah. In the next pasuk, when it says, Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah, God sees that Leah is despised, that's not the reality. What is that? What is that? That's how she feels. Now, of course, we know your feelings create your personal reality. So, Vayar Hashem ki snua Leah, God sees that Leah is despised. Leah is not chas Hashem despised. She is loved, she's appreciated, she's cherished. But she also knows that she's not the center of her husband's universe. She knows that there is another person, another woman, who her husband loves more. And as a result, she feels forsaken. As a result, she feels hated. As a result, she feels despised. This is what is happening in the home of Yaakov Avinu. So first of all, it's an incredible insight just into marriage and what it takes to really build a meaningful and successful marriage, to make your significant other feel like they are the center of your universe. And when you don't feel that way, you feel forsaken, you feel marginalized, and you even feel despised. And we see this play out. Because look at number five. What happens? So Leah Imena becomes pregnant. And what does the pasuk say? Batar Leah batelet bein. So these psukim, by the way, are absolutely heartbreaking. They're heartbreaking verses. So Leah becomes pregnant. She gives birth to a child. Vatikra shmo Reuven. She calls her firstborn Reuven. Why? Ki amra, because she said, Ki ra'a Hashem ba'ani, Ki ata yehavani ishi. What does she say? God has seen my pain, and now my husband will love me. Now, why will he love me? Why will he love me? Because I've given him something that Rachel has not. I've given him a bechor. I've given him a firstborn son. So you understand how profound this is? You understand how profound Leah Imenu's pain is? The name Reuven is a contraction of two words. Re'ei ba'anyi. God has seen my suffering. You know, normally, when parents have a child, it's a time of incredible simcha, right? It's time of incredible simcha, right? It's like, imagine naming your child difficult labor, right? Meet my child, difficult labor, right? Why? Because the labor was so painful, right? The child is named, no, so you're crazy, you don't do that, right? This is simcha, this is good, this is wonderful. Leah Imenu's pain is so palpable that even when her firstborn son is born, she can't set aside those feelings of hurt and those feelings of marital neglect. But ultimately, again, they come up in the very naming of her son. Maybe now he'll love me. Maybe now he'll love me. God has seen my pain. He's given me a child. Maybe now he'll love me. Vatar old vateled bin. She becomes pregnant again, gives birth again. Vatomer, and she says, Ki shama Hashem ki snua anochi. God has heard how despised I am. Now this is interesting. You would have thought it wouldn't be God has heard, but rather what is it? God has what?
Seen.
What does it mean God has heard? So the Mefarshim point out something so tragic. Kadosh Baruch Hu knows that I cry myself to sleep every single night because I feel so despised. I feel so forsaken. I feel so marginalized. God has heard that I am despised. Vayitin li gam hazeh, therefore he's given me a second son. Vatikra Shimo, Shimon. Shimon, the name Shimon Shama, God has heard that I am despised. He's given me another child. Maybe things will turn around now. Vatar od vateled bein. She becomes pregnant the third time. And now again she gives birth and she says, Vatomer, ato hapam yilaveh ishi elai. Now I know with the birth of my third child, now my husband is going to feel connected to me. Now he's going to feel connected to me. Right? This time my husband will be attached to me. Why? Ki alarati lo shlosha banim. I've given him three sons. Remember, Rashi points out that through Ruach HaKodesh the Imo, soon there are going to be 12 Shvatim, right? 12 tribes, four wives, which means each wife technically has a chelik of three children. Leah says, now I've fulfilled my tachlis. I fulfilled my purpose. I gave him three sons. Maybe he will love me now. How overwhelmingly tragic is this? Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Each of those births, their very names, capture the essence of Leah Imenu's pain. A pain of a woman who feels despised. A pain of a woman who feels unloved. The pain of a woman who feels forsaken, not because she is unloved, marginalized, or forsaken, but because, as Rav Schwab said, she knows that she's not the center of Yaakov Avinu's universe. And if I'm not the center of your universe, then I'm despised. But then something amazing happens. Take a look at number 6. The pasuk says, Vatar od vateled bein. So she becomes pregnant. And again, she has a child. Vatomer, and she says, this is son number 4. Hapam od es Hashem. This time, I will thank God. Al kein kara shemo Yehuda, vata'amod miledes. Therefore, she called him Yehuda, right? Hodah, gratitude. And at this point in time, she stopped for a little while. She still has more children, but she stopped giving birth. What's dramatic about number 6, son number 4? It's a happy name, right? Something's changed now, right? This name does not reflect any type of longing to be wife number 1. This name doesn't reflect any type of pain as a result of being unloved or marginalized. In fact, this name quite beautifully captures the beautiful essence of childbirth. Hapam Odes Hashem. I will give thanks to God for giving me a healthy child, a beautiful child. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Midah HaVodah, gratitude. Al kein kara shmo Yehuda. So the question we have to analyze is what's changed. So what's changed? First three sons, Leah cannot even get beyond her marital pain to fully appreciate and embrace the joy of bringing children to this world. The proof to that is their names reflect her personal marital pain. Yet something happens with son number 4, Yehuda, where the pain seems to have gone away and is replaced by simcha. Yehuda, thank you Hashem for this incredible miracle. Once again, Rav Schwab comes along and provides an incredible explanation. Take a look at number 7. Rav Schwab writes, Hine, Bahaledos Hakodmos, Haya Inyan Kriyas Hashemos, Begeder Tfila Ala Asid. Ki Ati Yevani Ishi, Hepam Yidave Ishi Elai, Kimir Shalonen Saba Kashasa. So this is amazing. So what's happened? With the birth of every son, you see, Rav Schwab makes a very interesting observation. Not only are the names descriptive of her profound sadness, but they're what? Each of those names almost represents a prayerful yearning. Maybe with the birth of this child, things will change. God has seen my pain, things will change. God has heard my pain, things will change. My husband will become more attached to me, Levi, things will change. Rav Schwab says, then Leah Imenu has an incredible epiphany. And she says, Kinira, Shilo Nansa Bakashasa. But after the birth of all three boys, first three boys, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, what does she see? Nothing's changed. It's the same thing. My husband loves me, just doesn't love me the most. Right? Things are fine. I'm not really despised. I just feel despised. But I'm wife number two. And I'm not wife number one. One son didn't push my status up. Two sons didn't push my status up. Three sons didn't push my status up. I'm still in the same place. So Leah Imenu does something amazing. V'lachim, achshav b'leida Yehuda, b'leidas Yehuda, lo hispalala od ela amra, hapam od es Hashem, b'chom matzav shehu. By son number four, Leah stops davening for things to change. Instead, what does Leah do? Something incredibly powerful. She accepts the reality of her circumstances. This is it. This is it. And then something incredible happens. The moment that she accepts the reality of her circumstances, she's able to appreciate the beautiful brachos that she has. You see, Leah was not really able to fully appreciate, the birth of her first three sons. Why not? Because she was so steeped in pain over what she felt was a dysfunctional marriage. She was so steeped in pain over having felt that she was marginalized, pushed to the side, and relegated to an inferior status, that she could not accept the beautiful brachos that were being visited upon her. Says Rav Schwab, she went through that with three children, and nothing changed. So when Yehuda is born, she has an epiphany. She says, you know, I could continue to feel terrible about myself, about my marriage, and about my situation, but chances are nothing will change. Or I can accept the reality of my circumstances. And once I accept the reality of my circumstances, I can open up my eyes to appreciate the blessings that I truly have. You see, when you're overwhelmed in life by that which is broken, you cannot appreciate that which is functional and good, because that which is broken, it colors everything. But the moment you accept that the stuff that's broken may remain broken, allows you to open your eyes, appreciate and understand all of the beautiful blessings you truly possess. When Yehuda is born, she's no longer trying to become wife number one. Rachel's wife number one. I'm wife number two. Rachel was the one he wanted to marry. I'm the one he was tricked into marrying. Rachel is the one who has his heart. I am not the one who has his heart. I can daven, I can cry, but it's not going to change anything. And the only thing I'm doing to myself is that my veil of tears prevent me from seeing the beautiful blessings I possess. So let me accept my reality as it is. Let me accept my life as it is. And that acceptance empowers Leah Imenu to see the beautiful brachos. So she has her fourth son, and she's like, wow. Hapam odes Hashem. By the way, how ironic is it? Now you're giving thanks to God? This is your fourth child, right? Your fourth healthy child. No struggles like the other Imos had. And now for the first time, you're saying thank you to God. For the first time, you're saying thank you to God. Yeah, because this is the first time in her life, in her married life, that she's not preoccupied with that which is broken. She's accepted the reality as it is, and that allows her to see the beautiful brachos. Leah Imenu had thought, that she had put this pain behind her. She accepted it, she resigned herself to it, and she moved on. And everything was fine, until when? Until the episode with the Dudaim. This is where everything unravels. So now go back to what we started with. So Reuven comes back with the field, from the field, with the dudan, with the I think the English translation that's often used are mandrakes. Right? He comes back from the field with the flowers. Rachel says to Leah, can I have some of those? And Leah says, what a chutzpah. Hama'at kachtech es yishi. You took my husband. Now you want to take my flowers. Look what the Medrash says in number 8. This is an incredible... So remember again, what the Medrash does is the Medrash fills in a bit more of the narrative, the discussion, or the conversation, or the fight between Rachel and Leah. Listen to this. Says the Medrash, this is a wild Medrash. Hama'at kachtech, amra Leah l'Rachel. So Leah said to Rachel, lo dayech shalakachta es ishi, shenimshach libo acharecha. You know, it's not enough that you've taken my husband, that you've literally stolen his heart. Listen to these words. Shenimshach libo acharecha. It's not enough that you've stolen his heart and you have his whole heart. That's not enough for you, right? You need the flowers also. Listen to this. Amra Rachel Leah. You see, in the Torah, Rachel doesn't really respond. In the Medrash, she does. Rachel says to Leah, you're the one with chutzpah. You're calling him your husband? Lo Leah Isheich, Elohu Ishi. My dear sister, you're forgetting what I did for you. Right? You're forgetting that he was my husband. You're forgetting that it was my wedding. You're forgetting that he was my intended. And I gave you the simonim, I gave you the signs so that you could stand in for me. So how dare you call him my husband, meaning speaking to Leah, when he's really my husband, says Rachel. The only reason he came from Be'er Sheva, Yaakov came from Be'er Sheva, was to marry me, was to marry Rachel. Va'al yidei shemasarti lach hasimonim na'asei sheikh. And it's only because I decided to be nice. It's only because I was a balas chesed. It's only because I didn't want you to be embarrassed that I gave you the signs, right? Yaakov and Rachel, remember again, I devised the whole system of signs because Yaakov was afraid that Laban was going to do something to swap out one woman for another. They made signs. Rachel says to Leah, you're calling him your husband? You're accusing me of taking your husband? You're accusing me of stealing his heart? I gave you my husband. He's my husband. I gave him to you and only married him after you already married him. Lachain, Yishkavim achalayla, Lefisha haya minag Yaakov, Lishkavim leya layla achas, Vimracha layla achas, Vaosa layla shalracha isa. So now, the interesting part is the Medrash doesn't explain to us that last part. So what's the end of this discussion? So Rachel says, Leah, fine. He'll sleep in your tent tonight. Okay, how exactly does that resolve things? Take a look at number 9, another medrash, an incredible medrash. V'atomer lahama'at kachtech es ishi, v'lakach tegam esudei ebeni, mikomokom, ba'ali ha'isa t'chila. Right, so in this version of the medrash, after Rachel says to Leah, right, he was my husband, and I did a chesed and gave him to you. How dare you say that I'm trying to take your husband? Listen to what Leah responds. He says, Mikomakom ba'ali hayatchila. Leah says to Rachel, you know what? Once you gave me this simanim and you allowed me to marry Yaakov, you know what you should have done? You know what you should have done? Find another husband. Find another husband. Va'at nichnast v'na'asis litzara. Rachel, you're not such a balas chesed, by the way. You're not so great. Right? If you were so great, you would have given me and Yaakov a shot at happiness. It's nice that you went ahead and you gave me the simanim, but you married my husband just a little while later. So what did you do? What chesed did you do for me? What goodness, if you were truly a... But like, have you ever seen this medrash before? Right? They don't teach this in school. This is absolutely incredible. This is the conversation between the emos, between Rachel and Leah. Ultimately, again, anger, venom. Rachel telling Leah, what a chutzpah, how dare you accuse me of trying, that I took your husband? He was mine. I was a balas chesed and allowed you to marry him so you shouldn't be embarrassed and humiliated. Leah says, if you were such a balas chesed, Don't put on the piety act. If you were such a Baal HaS Chesed, you would have said, you would have respected me. And you would have said, if my sister married this man, there are other fish in the sea. Right? I have to find someone else. But to go ahead and marry the very man who married my sister is a recipe for death. But Rachel, you're selfish. You're selfish. And you decided to marry him, even though that was not the right thing to do. The Svarno says, the Cheskuni says, I'm sorry. So I actually skipped to number 11. The Svarno, Hama'at kachteches ishi, shelo hayalach lahaskim, shetia es sarasi, ke'amru ve'isha lachos lo dikachazor. So again, the Cheskuni and the Svarno both saying that Leah says to Rachel, if you were truly such a Baal HaS Chesed, you would have never married Yaakov. Because you know that once you marry him, we're going to be vying for the same man. We're going to be two sisters fighting for the same heart, fighting for the attention of the same man. If you really cared about me, and you really loved me, and you're really a Baal HaS Chesed, you would have stayed away from Yaakov after I married him. So this is all unfold. And poor, can you imagine this? Poor little Reuven just brought back some flowers. Right? Just brought back a couple of flowers and trying to do something nice for his mother. Right? He brought home flowers. And it was the spark that lit everything on fire. So what is the Torah Kedosha trying to tell us? You see, what's happened over here is something incredibly amazing. This family has had issues from day one. But they chose never to deal with it. What happens when you have issues in your family that you choose not to deal with? You could sweep things under the rug for a little while. You absolutely can. The truth is, I take that back. You could actually go ahead and sweep things under the rug for a long while. You could sweep things under the rug for weeks, for days, for months, for years, for decades. But at some point in time, the dam will burst. At some point in time, the negativity, and again, the medrash, what you're describing over here, if I weren't to give you names about who this, you would say, such pettiness, such craziness. You would never in a million years think, this is Rachel and Leah? These are the emos? Yeah, because there's been animosity. And literally almost like on the cusp of hatred and negative feelings and a wife scorn and a wife feeling ultimately again that she's not loved. This has been simmering for years. And you know what happens? When you walk around with a packle of negativity, when you walk around with ill will, when you walk around with negative emotions, all you need is the smallest spark to go ahead and ignite the powder keg. But then something amazing happens. So this is the blow up. This is the blow up. So what happens? Take a look at number 12. Vayavo Yaakov min hasada ba'erev. So first of all, Baruch Hashem, Yaakov wasn't home. That's the first thing, right? He was at work. Right, he was at work. So Yaakov Avinu comes home. Now watch how the story ends. Yaakov Avinu comes home from work, and what happens? By in the evening, Vateitse Leah likraso. Leah runs out to greet him. Vatomer Eli, Vatomer, she says to him, Eli Tavo, Yaakov, you're coming to my tent tonight. Ki sechar sechartich bedudae bini, because literally, again, I have bought you. Right? With the flowers of my son. Vayishkav ima balaylo. Yaakov supped with Leah that night. Vayishmael kimel Leah. Vatar vateled Yaakov ben chamish. And again, she becomes pregnant. She gives birth to the fifth son. You read these psukim, and the truth is, it sounds crazy. First of all, it sounds so prust, right? It doesn't sound appropriate, right? Leah Imenu is coming out. Okay, you're with me, right? I bought you, right? I bought you tonight, right? You're coming home with me. You're coming to my tent. You're sleeping with me. I bought you for the what? Like what? It's so strange. So the Netziv says something amazing. The Netziv says that heitze Leah likraso afagav shelohaya midas tznius. The Netziv says, what a breach of modesty. You know, it's important. Even a husband and wife, right? Even when a man and woman enjoy an intimate relationship together, there's a level of modesty that governs that relationship as well. Right? There's modesty that governs everything, even the most intimate of relationships. So for a wife to come out, for Leah to come out and say to Yaakov, come with me, you're coming to my tent, I bought you for the, you know, I bought your services for the mandrakes, for the flower. So this is totally not sanua. So why does she do it? Listen to what the Netziv says. Mikom makom, Noach haya lo lahakel bichvoda, mishetisbayesh es Rachel bevo Yaakov li ohala. Says the Netziv something amazing. Remember, based on the story, Yaakov Avinu spent different time with different wives. So apparently that night, he was supposed to be with Rachel. What was Leah concerned about? It's incredible. What was Leah concerned about? That Yaakov's going to come home, and where is he going to go? To Rachel's tent. And then what's going to happen? She's going to have to, excuse me. You know, we had a little thing, right? They had a little arrangement. You're coming with me. You're coming with me, right? What a busha. How embarrassing would that be? Right? These are the parts of the story you never learn, right? Right? How embarrassing that would have been for Rachel. So what does Leah do? She does something that is a total breach of modesty in order to save her sister from embarrassment. Or what's happening in the story over here? Something absolutely amazing. The sisters finally had it out. They finally put everything on the table. You stole my husband. No, you stole my husband. You're an ingrate. You're a faker. You're pious. You're not pious. How can you do this to me? You ruined my life. I didn't ruin your life. You ruined my life. And then what happens? Right? Good. Because we've been thinking it for years. We've been pasting smiles on our face like everything's fine and everything's wonderful. And we pass each other and we all get along. We make it, put on a great show that we're one big happy family. But we're not. Leah says, I'm in pain. Rachel says, I'm in pain. So let's put it all on the table. Let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. Let's stop sweeping things underneath the rug. Let's put our issues on the table. We might not be able to solve them, but we could at least acknowledge them. And after everything is put on the table and the challenges are acknowledged, the sisters are able to coexist. What's the proof to that? By the time the story is over, Yaakov is going home with Leah. Because interestingly enough, it appears that for whatever the reason, again, remember, it's not literally that Yaakov is going with Leah because of the flowers, right? First of all, Yaakov is not a commodity. He's not an object that's going to be sold between wives, right? But rather what's happening over here is as follows. Rachel Imenu must have felt that the right thing to do right for tonight is to allow Yaakov to be with Leah. If Leah really feels so forlorn, and if Leah really feels so unloved, and if Leah really feels so forsaken, it's the right thing to do for Yaakov to go ahead and go with Leah. So Rachel says, you know what? You have the companionship of Yaakov tonight. But Leah reciprocates by not wanting to embarrass her sister. Because for Yaakov to go first to Rachel's tent, and Leah to then have to get him, first of all, is awkward. Second of all, might lead Yaakov to say, what exactly happened over here? And there was no need to bring Yaakov into the difficulty that was facing the rest of them. The sisters were able to deal with it. And so the story ends so dramatically with Rachel respecting Leah and therefore saying, you know what? Yaakov should be with you tonight. And Leah respecting Rachel, going out, speaking in a very immodest way. Because can you imagine Yaakov Avinu when he hears this? Right? Can you imagine? The Torah doesn't record his response. Right? What is he? Okay, what exactly are you supposed to respond to this? Because it's so overwhelming and it's so out of the norm. But what Leah does is she shocks him a little bit. Because what happens when she shocks him? He's not going to what? He's not going to ask any questions. And not asking questions is actually the best things. The sisters dealt with it. The family can now move forward. This is the story of the Dudan. And I think from this entire story, there are three major lessons that emerge. Lesson number one, which is a lesson that is derived from Leah Imenu in the first part of the story, that when you make peace with your circumstances, you are able to appreciate the brachos you have. So many times in life, We are so focused on what is broken, what's not good, what's dysfunctional, what's in a state of disrepair, that we can't see any of the blessings that we possess. Because no matter how difficult or how dysfunctional your life may be, there are always brachos. There are always brachos. You just have to have the right lenses to be able to see them. Lea Imenu misses out on the joy of the first three boys because she is so shrouded in the misery of what she perceives to be a dysfunctional marriage. She's so overwhelmed by feelings of being despised that she cannot appreciate the incredible blessings that she has. But the moment she makes peace with her circumstances is the moment that she begins to appreciate all of the beautiful blessings she has in life. Sometimes you have to learn to accept that which is broken in order to come to appreciate that which is whole. Lesson number two, also gleaned from Lea Imenu's life, that sometimes you have to let go of certain expectations in order to make room for new ones. In other words, Lea Imenu was living life with an expectation that she wanted to become wife number one. She wanted to be the center of her husband's universe. She wanted to be the most beloved person in her husband's life. And she fought, and she fought, and she dabbed, and then she cried, and she did everything. But that expectation didn't materialize. And so the moment she finds the strength to let go of that expectation, that's not going to materialize. Then what? I can make room for new expectations. I can make new room. And what were the new expectations? You see, I want to tell you something amazing. I think I mentioned this in this morning's shir also. You know, Lea Imenu might not have been the beloved wife, but Lea Imenu was most definitely what? She was the dominant maternal figure. In fact, she is the most dominant maternal figure out of all of the Imos. Why? It's not just the pshat that she had the greatest number of children. It's that, remember again, who does Lea give birth to? Lea gives birth to Levi, right? Which is the kahuna, Levia, religious leadership. And Lea gives birth to Yehuda, Malchus monarchy. And not just any monarchy. Lea Imenu is the baba, right? She is the grandmother of the Melech HaMashiach. So it's not Rachel, it's not Sarah, it's not Rivka, it's Lea. So the moment that Lea lets go of the expectation, yes, she thought she wanted to be the most beloved wife. That was her expectation. That's what she wanted more than anything. But the moment she was able to let go of that expectation that would not materialize, she made room for new expectations. And she put those energies ultimately again into establishing herself as a dominant maternal force. Lea Imenu becomes the dominant maternal force in the house of Yaakov and in the creation of Am Yisrael. But that new expectation or that new reality only comes about when she's able to let go of the old expectations. And lesson number three, family tensions don't go away. They simply simmer beneath the surface. So there's an interesting thing when it comes to family dynamics. I often find that people are so afraid of confrontation. So afraid of confrontation. There's a problem. And again, you can fill in the blank. This could be a problem in a marriage. It could be a problem with children, a problem with parents, a problem with whatever it is. In a family, we don't want confrontation. We don't want confrontation. So what happens? Now, so many families exist like this. There is this huge elephant. And often it's not just an elephant. It's like a herd of elephants, right? In the room, right? In the room. There are like such, but everybody's like smiling and nice. And can you pass this? And oh, sure, it's such a nice Shabbos, such a nice Yantiv. Can't wait till we get together. And meanwhile, you're just holding your breath. Please let there not be World War III, right? And let everybody go home peacefully. Everybody remain intact. Whew, I made it, right? I made it. We're safe until the next family gathering, right? Until we have to confront. Family issues don't go away. They simmer beneath the surface. And although they could simmer for a very long time, at some point in time, the dam will burst and the issues come pouring out. The danger when the issues come pouring out is you often can't control the rage and the intensity of the waves of emotion. Rachel and Leah say some pretty crazy stuff to each other, right? They say some pretty nasty stuff to each other. Why? Because there was so much pent-up animosity, aggression, and anger that when the dam finally burst, they couldn't control it. It all just came out. You stole my man. You stole my man. You stole my man. You did this. What are you talking about over here? Hey, because that's what happens when you keep going ahead and sweeping things underneath the rug. We can't be afraid of confrontation. You know, the big secret is that sometimes a little bit of confrontation paves the way for a lot of peace. A little bit of confrontation paves the way for a lot of peace. No one likes to confront family issues. No one likes it. No one enjoys it. It's always uncomfortable. And you know, people love, everybody becomes like the Aaron HaKohen of Shalom. Right? I just want Shalom. I just want Shalom. But you have to realize sometimes when people say they want Shalom, what they're really doing is what? They're engaging in avoidance. Right? I call it Shalom, but I'm really just scared of actually tackling this issue because I don't know what's going to happen. And what we see from this story is sometimes a little bit of confrontation. Rachel and Leah could have done this much earlier on, and it didn't have to be nasty, and it didn't have to get heated, and it didn't have to take years and years and years for this buildup of negativity, and it didn't have to end up with Leah Imenu feeling so marginalized and despised. Had they spoken about the elephant in the room much earlier on, there could have been shalom in the family years earlier. So family tensions are always there. You could sweep it under the rug for so long, but don't be afraid of confrontation. Because sometimes confronting the challenge, a little bit of confrontation, can pave the way for long-lasting peace. An incredible story, a simple story that gives us such profound life lessons. But you know, it's always important. To learn the lessons is the easy part. To internalize the lessons, that is Emirat Hashem Aravodah. Sure, of course.